My name's Michelle O'Wu and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust. The purpose of the research is to compile a contemporary portrait of the UK. The date is the 31st of July 2009 and the time is now 3:44 p.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you come from, please?
I'm Karen Head, I'm 42 and I actually come from the United States, from Atlanta, Georgia.
Are you staying in the UK at the moment?
I am. I'm teaching in a summer abroad program for the Georgia Institute of Technology, which is the university where I teach. And we come here for 6 weeks every year and are housed at Worcester College at Oxford.
Can you tell me about a bit more about what you do there? What is your role?
Well, I teach actually literature. We try to keep the focus British, so even though I'm an Americanist by training, I'm here this year teaching a course on British poetry, actually poetry about art. Probably the most famous example of that would be Auden's poem, Musée des Beaux-Arts, which is about the famous Bruegel painting, Fall of Icarus. So we started with that, and we've been looking at all kinds. I mean, there's the term is ekphraxis, or ekphrastic poetry, and it's a pretty large genre of poetry, and so the students have been going out to the museums and actually seeing the real paintings instead of looking at photos in the books, and then reading the poems about them. And that makes often a very big difference, because sometimes the paintings are much smaller than they think, and sometimes they're much larger than they think, and the detail is very different than what they can get in a book. So it's been very interesting.
You said they're going out to look at the paintings. Where are the paintings?
I tried to pick artworks that were housed in British museums, and so that they could easily, as they were traveling around on the weekends, either come here to the National Gallery or go to the National Gallery in Edinburgh. I mean, and there are a number of smaller museums in Birmingham and all around, actually. So the great sort of disappointment this year is that the Ashmolean is under renovation in Oxford and is completely closed this summer. So, but interestingly enough, there was a Mapplethorpe exhibit that's going on at the Oxford Museum of Modern Art. So, you know, we were able to still do things even in Oxford. Yeah.
How did you become attached to the program?
This program? I still am not entirely sure. I was online one night and I saw something about it. I don't even remember what link took me to. There's this plinth thing. I think it was a news piece, maybe an AP piece, or.
I meant the program.
Our summer program.
Sorry.
I actually taught in the program last year. It's a program that your department often will put you up for. My fiance is actually also a professor. He's a computer scientist, and he teaches in the program as well. It's unusual to come 2 years in a row, but it just worked out that we were able to do that. Obviously most of the faculty back in the U.S. would like to come each year because it's a nice thing to do in the summer. Generally it's what our curricular needs are and who's available and that sort of thing. So we have 9 faculty here this year.
And did you have a hand in choosing the subject matter that you were going to present this year?
I proposed, I think, 3 different courses. Last year I taught a course on Jane Austen and film adaptations and actually brought camera equipment over and the students made their own short film adaptations. This year I proposed this course. I proposed a creative writing course because I am by training a poetry person. The third course, I think, was just a basic Shakespeare course, which we normally offer, but this year we're not. It seemed that just based on the students who had said they wanted to come for the summer, that more of them would need the course in poetry as our requirements go, so that was why they chose that one.
Can you tell me a bit more about your own poetry?
Well, my second and third book came out this year, a bit of an embarrassment of riches, I think the French call it. It's funny, though, because I signed the contract for the book that came out a week before I came to England 3 years ago, and I've been waiting for the publishing cycle to work itself through. Different publishers have different timelines. The book that I actually wrote third came out in February, but it was a much faster publishing schedule. So my work tends to, for the most part, be narrative lyric. It's, I think, very Southern. That doesn't necessarily translate, I think, to a British sensibility, although, I mean, regionalism in the U.S. is much stronger, and Southern writing is a very particular thing. Most people know what that means if you're talking about fiction. They think of Flannery O'Connor, they think of William Faulkner. Southern literature, I think, generally, Eudora Welty once said that one of the most important considerations is place, and it's hard to separate yourself from the place. So my most recent collection, Sassing, is very much about the South, and my sense of what that means in my life. I did grow up in the military, so I lived all over the world, but I still grew up very much in a Southern home, and I always knew that my family was from the South. And when we talked about home, when my parents talked about home, that to them that meant in Georgia. So it's interesting because both my brother and I, my only sibling, tend to, I think, sort of gravitate away from home but are very fond of home at the same time. He was in the Air Force and retired and is actually married to a Dutch woman and lives in Holland. And my fiance is British, so my mom finds this comical that that's the way it worked out. But I really became interested particularly in writing about the South when I was in graduate school doing my doctoral degree, which I did in Nebraska. And there's something about going away from it and really thinking about it that I think brings it up for you. So I've been able to give a couple of readings here in London since I've been here, so it's been nice. Yeah.
What are you going to do on the plinth today?
I'm actually going to try, I hope, technology allowing, to do a what's called an exquisite corpse poem. The tradition of that is actually based in the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, French salons, sort of coming out of the Dadaist movement, actually, and the notion of things being fractured and how you could break things and deconstruct things and what would happen if you did that. And someone would write a line of poetry and they would pass it to someone and they would read the line and they would write a line and then fold the first line over so that you could only ever see the last line. And then they would unfold it at the end and read what they had and see what had happened. I thought that I would try to do that via Twitter. I have poets set up in various corners of the world online, ready to sort of do this. And the reason that I decided to use the Twitter interface is that I knew that at least if my computer failed me, I could attempt to use my phone, although at 42, my thumbs don't work like these 18-year-olds, I'm afraid. It will take a little bit more time, but the other thing was limiting it to the 140 characters. I thought it would be more manageable. So I've enlisted a group of folks, and they're going to be waiting, and hopefully my laptop will work, but and we'll see what we have at the end.
Will you be interacting with the audience?
I also have a bullhorn, which the director of security, who is part of the British, I guess your version of the National Guard, he's, I think, former full-time military, but the director of security at Worcester, actually went down to his regiment and brought me back a bullhorn. The running joke was that he's one of those people who seems to be able to come up with anything, and they said, well, we're surprised that he didn't get you a tank and air cover. So I don't know, if a helicopter appears, it could be David's doing, but I had come to the square several times since I've been here, and I knew that to be heard, I would need something. So I am going to see if I can get maybe someone to shout out a line or two and then transcribe it for them. I don't know, it's 5 o'clock on a Friday.
Sorry, there is some background noise at the moment. Somebody seems to be drumming. Sorry, Karen.
That's okay.
Just going back to what you said, sorry, about the exquisite corpse poems and the Dadaist movement.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a movement that particularly appeals to you? Or was it more the suitability of...
Yeah, I think it was really more the suitability. My area of specialty from a literature standpoint is late 20th century American poetry. I'm beginning with, more or less, with Ginsberg's Howl and coming forward from there. I think that I'm being a poet at a place like Georgia Tech, which is an engineering school, I mean, we're known for science and math, and that's what we do. Although, interestingly enough, I'm housed in our fairly new, by college standards, the College of Liberal Arts, the Ivan Allen College of Liberal Arts. And I'm in the School of Literature, Communication, and Culture, which would probably be called the English department in most universities, but isn't, or the literature department. Our graduate degree is in digital media. And so I've been there for over 5 years now, and I've become increasingly interested in how technology and poetry can come together and do things. And I've done a couple of digital poetry projects already, one that employed touchscreen technology where you could wipe away a poem and find another poem behind it. In that case, I used a poem that's in my Sassing book that's a response to another poem by a fairly famous American writer, Andrew Hudgens. And since his poem had inspired my poem, I wanted to translate that experience in a way that was kinetic and that people would understand. We have a lovely musical background, actually. So that's, you know, I think being interested in the digital is another reason why the Twitter project appealed, probably more so than the tradition of Exquisite Corpse.
What was it about this project, Anthony Gorman's project, One Another, particularly that appealed to you, that made you want to take part, do you think?
Well, I've always been a big fan of installation art and performance poetry as well, you know, performance art. I certainly knew about some of his work, I mean, not intensely, but I've always liked these notions of, you know, like people like Cousteau, who, you know, they do these huge art projects, and I'm always sort of fascinated in how they manage to pull that off. And I love the sort of new movement where they're the guy whose name is escaping me, you know, calls all these people together, hundreds of people, to say be in a train station, and they all freeze in place. You know, I think that the public has kind of distanced itself from art for a while, and anytime there's an opportunity to bring people back to that, I'm fascinated with that. I also like collaboration. In fact, I've chosen as an epigraph for the Exquisite Corpse piece Walt Whitman's line, "I contain multitudes," because one of the reasons I didn't just want to do something on my own on the plinth, I wanted to involve other writers, is because I think that it's about more than just one person. I mean, obviously it's about 2,400 people standing up there, plus an artist, plus all the staff, plus all the audience, essentially built-in audience in the square at any given time. And I didn't want to do something that was particularly solitary, although I will say that the project I have loved most has been a very solitary project. The woman in the first week who sculpted a topiary in the early morning hours up on the plinth, I was absolutely just in love with her, and I thought it was the most wonderful thing. And probably second most impressed with a guy the first week who said that he wanted to be on the plinth because he never got an hour to himself anymore. And he just walked to the edge of the plinth and just stood there with his eyes closed for an hour. And at first you were a little bored, but you kept checking back, and there was this calm and this peace that kind of came over you through his experience. And I thought, you know, it's not always about the big things. It's sometimes about the little things. And I wanted more people to be part of that, so.
Do you have any reservations or concerns about taking part in this project?
There's this sense of disappointing people, of not being exciting or being interesting, I think, especially at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. I don't know. I've been sort of reading some of the posts by people, and some people seem to think that the hour takes a really long time, and some people seem to think it goes by, you know, quickly. I don't think I'll really know until I come off how ultimately I feel about it. I mean, I'm excited about it, and I feel really, really privileged to have gotten a position, especially as an American, because I'm not sure how many of us, if any, of the other participants are. And I've been surprised by the reaction back home. I mean, people really, it'll be noon in the U.S. on the East Coast, and all my colleagues actually in the department have set up a big television in one of the public rooms, and people are getting together to watch, and there are people back at Oxford watching, and my parents are going to be watching, and my parents are not technology people, so I hope that they're able to navigate that. But
where will people be able to see this finished poem?
You know, I don't know yet. Since Time Magazine has been interested in what I'm doing, I'm not sure if they're going to want maybe perhaps to have a copy of it. If not, there are a couple of journals that I have really good relationships with who have really strong online presence, who I will probably ask if they're interested in publishing the final piece. You know, you don't know what you're going to get either. It's kind of like an open mic. It could be the most fantastic thing ever, and it could be absolute crap. But I don't think it can be. I mean, I think it will be an interesting study, if nothing else. And, you know, if nothing else comes to it, perhaps some of our digital media students will be interested in looking at the whole process of the project and maybe writing a paper or doing something, getting something scholarly from the experience.
You mentioned earlier on that you'd already taken part in some collaborative work. Is that right?
I have. I've worked with other people. The digital poetry is always collaborative because I'm not a programmer. So I've worked with students who've done the programming side to make the machine do what I'd like for it to do. I tend to rely pretty heavily on our students who are very talented for that sort of thing. You know, I've given interesting combinations of readings. In fact, there's a wonderful poet and friend of mine in Atlanta, Colin Kelly, who is so incredibly jealous because he is such an Anglophile and is in London any chance he gets. And he will be one of the poets online with me today. But we gave a reading just last year, and we decided instead of doing it the traditional way that we actually flipped a coin to see who was going to go first, and one of us read a poem, and then whatever poem that inspired for the next person read a poem that was somehow connected, and we went back and forth and gave the reading that way, which was a lot of fun. I don't do slam poetry, but I judge slam poetry. I don't do it because I'm not very good at it, so I'm pretty involved in that. I sit on the board for Poetry Atlanta, and actually I have been raising money for them. That's been my project, my little side charity project. People have been donating money to Poetry Atlanta to sponsor me on the plinth. I'm not getting any of the money. It's all going to Poetry Atlanta. And essentially, we're a group that tries to promote poetry and sponsor other poets who don't really have any money, who might, say, you know, be going to go to the National Slam Competition or, you know, need a little help getting to a place to present their work or something like that. So,
could you tell us a little bit more about slam poetry?
Slam poetry is such a fascinating thing. I didn't know about it until I went to graduate school when I did my master's at the University of Tennessee. And oddly enough, Knoxville, Tennessee is known for a lot of things. I wouldn't have expected slam poetry to be one of them. Football, American football, yes. Slam poetry, no. But they have a very active scene. Essentially, you get a group of people together, each have 3 minutes. They cannot use props. Most of them memorize their work. It tends to be fairly socially or politically motivated in some way, kind of hip-hop-ish in a sense without the music, but that's not necessarily true. You do get those sort of urban music roots for some people, but not for everyone. And essentially they it's called spitting. Instead of speaking a poem, you spit the poem. And it's scored Olympic scoring. You can get 0 to 10.0 and anything in between, so you can get a 7.6. There are usually 5 judges. Low and high scores are thrown out. It's 3 rounds normally. They get rid of usually a third of the group the first round, another third the second round. And it is competitive nationally. I mean, there are nationals usually in Austin, Texas every year. There have been several documentaries done about slam poetry. I think it proves that anybody who thinks poetry is dead, and in the United States we have a bit more of that, I think, than they do in the rest of the world, perhaps, that they would be very surprised to find out that it's quite alive and well. It's maybe not the academic sort of page poetry that most of us are familiar with, but it's happening, and it's interesting, and it's exciting, and young people care about it. So, yeah, that's kind of the brief version of slam poetry. And I love it. I love to judge it. So, but it is a little bit of a commitment when you judge, because they tend to go on for hours. So, yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Wow, no. I mean, I as I said, I'm still sort of stunned that I could even get a spot. I was amused to hear that Gormley actually put himself in the lottery and did not get a slot. At times I've sort of, you think to yourself, well, I hope I didn't take a slot from someone who would have done something all that, much more interesting. But I'm happy to have it, and I was happy to have it at a time when I could do it. So, I'm, and if it turns out I'm the only American up there, I think in one sense, I figured at some point someone might ask me, well, this is supposed to represent the face of Britain today. And my answer to that would be, well, there are a lot of Americans who come here and live here, and whether it's a holiday or they study here as students or they move here for business, I think that's as much a part of Britain today as someone who's born here and lives here. So that would be my answer for that. So I'm just happy to have a spot.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.